This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
PHL Nation, I have one simple favor. It's more important than a subscription or like or anything like that, because Laborde Therapy Center, they're up for the Best of Acadiana Best Physical Therapy Clinic Award. Click the top link in the description right now for them to win, baby. Go vote, and you can win up to $250. Yes, Laborde Therapy. Our coverage wouldn't be possible this year without them. Link is in the description. And also, if you're in the need for anything physical therapy, book today, LaborTherapy.com. Freaking go. Please go vote for Laborde Therapy. They need to win this award, and I think PHL Nation will get them over the top. Hey, I wouldn't be able to do this without them. Literally, the cost of all this streaming stuff is going up, and Laborde Therapy is helping us out in a major way. So, sad story. First time we've been live since the JT Lindsay news broke. I am really high on this young man out of Alexandria, Louisiana. My goodness gracious. So many great football players out of Alexandria. In fact, my latest card pickup, DJ Chark, from that same exact high school. So my heart is broken. Hopefully all of this gets cleared and JT Lindsay is allowed to come back. Obviously, there are so many different legal stuff that I won't get into involving JT Lindsay. But the short of it was two young men allegedly involved with a very serious matter JT Lindsey, according to his attorney, 2 months after the fact, had them at his apartment slash dorm. And that's why he was, you know, he turned himself in to LSU police and so on and so on. So he is currently away from the team right now, suspended, if you will. And we will see how this all plays out with JT Lindsey. And he actually was, to me, a nice piece for LSU. We don't know a gazillion percent if Harlan Berry is going to be ready to be a true freshman contributor. So I would have just given you one extra piece to the puzzle to potentially be the guy for LSU next year behind Caden Durham. And we also don't know what Caleb Jackson is going to do next year. So the reason I think LSU was fine is because, number one, JT Lindsey probably wasn't a piece of this LSU offense going into next year. The second thing also is, and I do think this is, you know, very clear as well, I just don't know enough to say if JT Lindsey is going to, you know, get out of this or whatever. But obviously, as always, innocent until proven guilty. I'm really rooting for the young man, and hopefully everything gets sorted out. But even though I think he's good, I do think Harlan Berry, also him being in spring ball, was ahead of him on the depth chart. I also do think LSU feels comfortable with Caleb Jackson going into next year. So we will see what happens there. Okay. But I do think LSU has a few emergency plans that they can go to if JT Lindsey is not available for LSU this next season. Because theoretically, let's just say LSU has a player go out with injury or something else. Guess what? You are down to two scholarship running backs. Two. I was always in the camp that LSU should have gotten a transfer portal running back to join this room. They elected to not do that. I would have liked to have gotten someone to join this room from elsewhere, just to add a little extra competition and depth. But if somebody does go down, two running backs, so what is LSU going to do? Well, number one, Juwan Johnson, even though he's listed as a quarterback, is a quasi running back as well. He has practiced some at the running back position. We'll talk to John Eads in just a second of WAFB, and he's going to break down how he has actually looked in that role. Obviously, there is some that believe that Juwan Johnson could play some quarterback as a wildcat per se. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of that, but it could very much happen. But Juwan Johnson's going to be somewhat involved in the run game. Another guy that I want to bring up is Xavion Thomas. You know, he had two runs early in the season that both were profitable runs. One was versus USC, and then the second was kind of a counter run that went for 9 yards versus another USC in South Carolina. And then for the rest of the year, we really didn't hand him the football. Now, he did get a pop pass touchdown on, you know, the jet sweep Tyreek Hill play that the Chiefs popularized, and we used to run with Kayshon all the time. He had one of those versus UCLA last year. But the truth is, I do believe, and I really do mean this in my heart, that Xavion Thomas, who's kind of this gadget guy, can give you something at running back if you absolutely positively needed it. All right, so I do think LSU is going to be fine if JT Lindsey does not come back. Now, this was something that was brought up to me, and I don't know why I don't ever buckle this top button, because I'm always ready to party, but I'm gonna button it up to look a little bit more professional, because we have a professional reporter coming up pretty soon. This is so key, and I really do think this is key. What if none of the running backs truly matter? Obviously, I think Caden Durham matters. He is the odds-on favorite to lead the SEC in rushing. He was second-team All-SEC. We're really high on him. But none of it matters unless you get a rush scheme together that makes sense, that is somewhat valuable, that is somewhat convincing, that you can go out there and smash a mother effer in the mouth. So if the blocking, but more importantly, the play calling isn't up to snuff, because there are rushing schemes you can call and rushing plays you can call where your offensive linemen don't need to complete a single block for the play to work. There's not a whole lot of these, but they do exist, and we have broken them down here on this channel before. But whatever scheme that it is, whether it's duo, whether it's outside zone, whether it's counter, whether it's a combination of those, inside zone, you want to get less miles and run power, you've got to find something that works. So just as important as Caden Durham is going to be to this offense, the overall arching philosophy is going to matter, not necessarily as much as a Caden Durham, because I do think Caden Durham is so damn good that he can make it work if the scheme isn't the absolute best. But to really unlock this overall offense and to make it Durham-proof, you need to have stuff called that actually works. And last year, we just didn't have that. We just didn't. Now, last thing, because this is very important. We do have players that watch the show. We do have parents, even more so parents that watch the show compared to players, okay? It is so important in any walk of life. And I could have done better in this very aspect. We all could have done better in this very aspect. There are cliches out there that exist, and sometimes they don't mean jack squat. They just don't. But the one that makes more sense than any other, it would not shock me, and I should do better, especially on this glorious Sunday, in reading my Bible, it would not shock me if this is somewhere in the Bible that I just have not seen. That's how true, that's how important what I'm about to say actually is. My granddad said it to me. My grandma said it to me. They are no longer here, but they told it to me at a young age. My grandmother, Elaine, from Baton Rouge, she is, to me, the best person to ever walk the face of the earth in my family. She won so many awards for philanthropy and all that stuff. I'm sorry, I'm just going to brag on her because, you know, I thought about her earlier today. And my grandfather from Point Coupee Parish, a bricklayer, he also told me this very thing, and I hold it near and dear to my heart. You are who you surround yourself with. It's just the truth. It's just the truth. You are who you surround yourself with. Now, it's impossible to know a gazillion percent what all your friends do. It's impossible. Friends fall off the deep end, and it is very well plausible that, you know, that JT Lindsay had no idea that this happened or whatever. But oftentimes when you do something to the detriment of your own career, your own life, it's not just you that did it. It was who you were with that pressured you. Now, I'm not saying that you do not control your own actions. It's not what I'm saying at all. All right? You are ultimately responsible for what happens to you. But that does not mean you aren't influenced by those who are around you. So be very careful. And in particular, if you become someone prominent, as sad as this sounds, go ask Charles Barkley about this. He talks about this all the time. Your circle should shrink. Okay? It should shrink. So take that from my no longer with us, Pawpaw Cliff and Grandmother Elaine. And I'm sure a lot of you were told this very thing. You are who you surround yourself with. It is the single most important thing. Okay? So JT Lindsay, it was not him that got him in trouble. It wasn't. So You know, it's just good blanket advice. All right. Now, we get to some of your questions before we get to our guests. Lifting my cross. Welcome to the channel. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. And that's honestly, there you go. I knew it was somewhere. It had to have been somewhere in the good book. Okay. Now, speaking of surrounding yourself with great people, I've got to be honest. When it comes to young local television reporters, there's not many in the Baton Rouge area that I have been more impressed with. And I'm not just saying that because he's getting ready to join us. Okay. And big thanks to Jared for the super chat. He's a fan of this young man as well. But holy crap, it got to the point where the LSU baseball team themselves were like, I just dropped something in my big introduction of this guest. The LSU baseball team themselves started tweeting out his work. It was that good. He is a chronicler of LSU athletics, following in the footsteps of the great Jacques Doucet, friend of the channel, of the same organization, WAFB. But you know what's funny? You know what's crazy? I was like, man, this guy is so good at baseball. He has boots on the ground for every football practice. And he joins us now. It is none other than Mr. John Eads. John, what's up, man?
Hey, Carter. Thanks for the introduction, man. You're too kind. Checks in the mail. Zip code didn't change, right?
It didn't, baby. John cool. Eads. And look, right when I said the baseball thing, I couldn't see this.
Look at that.
Yeah. So I do want to include this. You made my freaking day before we get into some football stuff. Sweet. Because there are a few things in life I love more than dogs. Mm-hmm. All right. And you go cover this Monster Milam dog fundraiser, right? So what was this exactly?
Yeah. So he didn't do any summer baseball. Like, some guys go and play in summer leagues and stuff, but Stephen Milam is Stephen Milam. He doesn't really need to, go hard in the summer necessarily in these leagues and stuff like that. Obviously, he's been here. He's been training and stuff, getting ready for junior year. But he's had more free time to kind of do some charity work and NIL type things. So he had an autograph signing session at a local restaurant where people could get his autograph, but they had to donate food, pet supplies, or money to a local dog shelter that he's gotten dogs from. To get his autograph, kind of do a meet and greet with him. So that was one. He did one a couple weeks ago, which was a little more tasty. He went to a local bakery and they made him his own personalized cupcake, chocolate, okay, mint with an Oreo on top, that fans could buy. And same kind of thing. They had to come in there, purchase, some kind of a sweet, or they were selling pictures of Steven, and then they could go up there and chat with him, get some photos and autographs and stuff like that. He was there for like 5 or 6 hours or something like that. So just a lot of really good charity work for a local dog shelter. And that's something he takes really serious. He has a bunch of dogs both with him here in Baton Rouge and then back at home. And, it's a cause that really has a lot of meaning to him. So just really cool to kind of see this high profile athlete, doing stuff. And sometimes these guys do charity work just to kind of check a box, or kind of boost their PR. But you can tell that, like, the cause that he's doing this stuff for is, like, extremely genuine. And he's a fan favorite. It's for reasons like this. So, great guy. And cool to just kind of see him in his element here. And they raised thousands and thousands of dollars for the dog shelter, too. So, it's just great altogether.
I can't love this guy anymore. I just can't. So, I have no real LSU baseball memorabilia other than that man's photo up here, this Monster Milam.
Oh, yeah.
Personalized. I need to get Monster to personalize my memoir. But this was from Chuck Broad, a very good artist. He gave this to me knowing that I'm a big fan of his. And God, I just loved your baseball coverage. It was so good. So if you want to go back, actually, when you said you were going to come on, I went back and I relived all of it. Because football, I just take like more seriously. It's hard for me to just enjoy the little things. Baseball, I'm just a fan. And boy, from the post game shots of the coaches and all of it, dude, you just got a natural eye for it. As far as football practice is concerned, what have been some interesting under the radar things that you have spotted at practice?
Well, thank you for that. All I appreciate it. And yes, baseball, but now it's on to football. So let's go get that national championship in football, right? some interesting things. Obviously, the last practice we got to go to Saturday, everybody wanted to see, you know, what Nussmeier looked like and everything. And we couldn't record any of practice, but we got to go for the whole practice. And he was wearing, I'm sure you've read this and everybody's read this, he was wearing like a brace sleeve on his left knee. But, you know, he came out in the 7-on-7, you know, a little bit of, yeah, I'm good, guys. I mean, the first three throws he made were difficult throws, like fades over the top, sideline throws, and they were just some of the best throws I've seen from Garrett Nussmeier. So that was kind of an indication right there that, yeah, I mean, this thing was blown way out of proportion and he's good. Some things that I've recently noticed that I think have been interesting, the red zone. So they showed us a lot of what they're working on in the red zone, some special things where they have Juwan Johnson at quarterback, Caden Durham at running back, and Garrett Nussmeier split out at receiver. And we saw a little bit of this at the spring game in some of those open periods. We even got the videotape, a little bit of it, where Juwan would take direct snaps and, you know, run the ball as a Wildcat quarterback. But we also saw Caden Durham get some direct snaps and run the ball in the red zone. So they're trying to add in some wrinkles because, you know, Carter, you know better than me. You do all the film reviews and you analyze every single drive of every game. So many times last year, they would settle for three or would come up empty completely because they just couldn't get six or seven in the red zone. So I think that they're really trying to expand their palette this year in any way that they can. And using Juwan Johnson in that regard, is a great way to do that. So, I think that's been a big focus for them in this camp is, hey, red zone, let's boost those percentages this year. Let's find more ways to score touchdowns. Joe Sloan even said it himself, and I think Blake was talking about this probably with you on one of his recent shows. It's about points, not yards. Like, you can put up 400 yards. They probably did that a lot last year, moving up and down the field. But in between the 20s is where you make your money, especially this year. So I think that they're really hyper-fixated on points right now and not necessarily chunk explosive plays, you know.
Wide receiver has looked like what to you?
You know, it's kind of been interesting because you go to a practice and you film their walkthrough scripted drive, and one day you'll see Chris Hilton, Aaron Anderson, Nick Anderson, and then the next day you'll see Destin Hill, Jelani Watkins, Barry and Brown. Just, you know, it's the soundbite that's been played over and over again. We have eight SEC receivers. Like, it's just crazy the depth that they have. I don't even know how they have all these guys because, you know, only 3 to 5 can be on the field at once. So somebody's going to be the odd man out this year, you know, unless people get injured and stuff, which obviously you don't hope for, but that stuff happens. With that said, everybody's not taking a rep off. Because you have those kinds of numbers, everybody wants those starting jobs. So you're seeing guys make catches in these live reps, you know, in scrimmages and team periods that, you know, they're treating it as if it's the last time they're ever going to catch a football. You know, they're flashing late hands. They're fighting off DBs who are literally bear hugging them. It's a really good competition and you could sense the intensity there. So loved what I've seen. I've mentioned this on a prior segment I did. I can't remember which one it was, but I like the timing between us and the receivers against zone coverage. Like, when they settle into open space, that ball is out and it's already there and it's in their hands, you know. And it's not just the guys that were on the team last year. Like, Nuss seems to have really good chemistry with all of the receivers, and that just speaks to what they've done behind closed doors over the summer, just going and throwing. I mean, you see the Instagram posts. They're always with each other, you know, at Elite, at all these local, you know, indoor facilities getting work in. So I think that that's really starting to show at fall camp.
The offensive line struggles from the talking heads like myself and other channels. Has that been overblown, or do you think that it's been justified?
I don't think so. There's definitely been days where the defensive line has gotten the better of the offensive line. But recently, I think that the offensive line has been better in certain team periods. Like the team period at Friday or Saturday's practice, the most recent one, the first one that we got to see, the offense, I think, won. It felt like they won every single play that was in that period. I mean, you had a Barry and Brown post route that was like a 30-yard gain, and it would have been a touchdown had he not fallen. There was some dispute on that. Was it a catch? Was it not a catch? It was a catch. Like 30-yard gain would have been a touchdown. A.J. Halsey went this way. He went that way. And, just kind of tripped as he was catching it. With that said, they're still rotating the offensive line. Like in that same team period, Paul Mubanga came in. Cohen Echols got in there at right guard, Mubanga at left guard. Obviously, it started out with Chester and Thompson at left and right. And it's no secret. There's still an ongoing debate. There's still an ongoing competition there. And it's still seemingly wide open. I think you've got your tackles solidified. I think Weston and Tyree have done a good job in camp, and Braylon obviously as well. You're just trying to figure out those guard spots. But I think the offensive line has looked better. Now, there's been a couple good run plays here and there, but you haven't consistently seen good chunk gains on the ground. So I want to see more from that run game. But as far as pass protection goes, I think it's been getting better. But obviously, there's a lot of variables there. Is the defense blitzing? What personnel are they putting out? Is it kind of the rotational pieces? So that's the thing with camp. It's hard to just make blanket statements and observations, but I would say thus far it's been 65-35 defensive line dominating the offensive line. But with that, one last thing, they did a drill inside this last practice. It was three offensive linemen against three defensive linemen and a linebacker, and the offensive line won a lot of those reps. Granted, it's three on three with a running back. It's not five on five, but I was encouraged to see guys putting a hat on a hat, washing guys away and clearing up some running lanes for the running back. So that was positive to see, at least that one-on-one where your assignment is clear, you can take advantage of that.
Many have been impressed with the defensive line. So we'll move on to the back seven defensively. Is there anything that's tickled your fancy there?
I really like what PJ Woodland has done. Like the guy is putting his body on the line in every rep. Like he's falling on his back. He's falling on his head. And I really haven't seen him get beat much at all, especially not in the team periods, man. Like he's swatting passes, he's ripping them out of there. And like I said, like he's jumping up and competing with like Tre'Davious Green, for example, and falling down right on his head. And we're like, Jesus, this guy okay? And he gets right back up and right back into it. Really think AJ Halsey is going to be a big dude for this defense. There was a play in one of the team periods, the last one of practice. I think it was Harlan Berry got a handoff, cut left, had some nice, you know, room to run through the B gap. And it was him against Halsey, one-on-one, something we've seen many times the last few years, whether it be Sage Ryan, Jardon Gilbert, just to name a few names. And that tackle hasn't been made. That's a broken tackle, which turns into a home run on the ground or an explosive play. But Halsey wrapped him up and brought him down on the spot, and it was just a 5-yard gain instead of a 50-yard gain. On top of that, he's all over the place in 7-on-7. I've seen him have some really good one-on-one coverage reps against the tight ends and some of the slot guys. So he's really, to me, like the full package safety. He can cover, he can help in run support, and I think Houston really hated to lose him. He was a really big part of that defense for them over there. Really, the two late spring portal adds between him and Bernard Gooden, who has been talked about a lot for the plays that he's made and the quick twitch he has in the trenches, potentially could be the two most impactful transfers for the whole cycle.
Walk us through what these next couple of weeks are going to be for LSU. Obviously, you know, they'll continue practicing, but is there anything involving the LSU schedule that stands out to you, or is it just going to be normal practice?
Well, we don't even have a schedule for this week yet, and it's been really fluid. Like, 1 minute we're allowed to go, the next we're not. I mean, this is the whole Nussmeier thing. One minute we're allowed to film practice, but then the morning of they say we can't film practice. So I'm not really sure. It's been a little wonky, and I'm not sure that everybody's necessarily thrilled at the amount of access that we've gotten and a lot of the stuff that we've gotten to see, even if we're not putting it on camera. Like some of the stuff that we're getting to view, you know, gets out there and it's an advantage potentially for other people. But, you know, I mean, it's not up to us. We're just doing our jobs here. Right. So, but I think that they're going to continue to hone in on special teams. We haven't seen a ton of special teams work. Like a couple practices ago, we'd see them start with field goal kicking and things like that. And, you know, little bit to be desired there. Same with the punting. So I think special teams needs to continue to be, a focus for them. And you need these next couple of weeks. This team is not ready, at least the offense, in my opinion. I like the defense a lot. I don't think the offense is ready to go out there and win right now. Like, you got to have that front five solidified. And I don't even know if you will. You know, like, what are you going to do in the next 2 weeks magically to have your good and best starting five? I don't know, but it's got to be better. You know, I need to see the offense win more reps in these team periods than they have. It's in there. There's flashes, but it's a little bit too sporadic. You know, you like to see one punch and then a counter punch, and we're just not really seeing that right now. So they really need these next couple of weeks to continue to just focus on themselves, not even Clemson. Like, you got to have your starting 22 figured out before you look at the other team's 22. But, you know, if they can just string enough together offensively, I think the defense is in a position where they can go and play winning football. Kind of like USC last year. I didn't think the defense played all that bad against USC. You know, no. There were moments in there, penalties and busts, and they dropped a pick six and things like that. But that's the big thing with season openers, you know, is you need to have the ground game because you can lean on that, and you just need to execute at a high enough level to score enough points and complement that defense. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing over the next few weeks is continuing to attack that.
Yeah, and I do want to address this before you go, because just for a juxtaposition here, did you know, like, at Michigan, Sharon Moore, no access?
I didn't, no.
Yeah, no access.
But nobody really covers Michigan because it's kind of in a gray area between Lansing and Detroit, and there's no media market really nearby there, which is a bummer. But
yeah, it's a true college town, right? It's different, and obviously Michigan is keeping a lot of, you know, there's a lot of other things with Michigan that makes them adversarial with their media. But, you know, I don't think people should be mad at LSU for giving you media access. I also don't think people should be mad if anything leaks out as far as, like, well, they're saying that this guy's in red zone period or that guy's in red zone period. I understand that. But, you know, for me, I would guess these changes in the practice schedule and your viewing and what you guys could film, I'm guessing it is mostly Garrett Nussmeier related why they did that. Or do you know the reason?
Yeah, I think it's that, because it hasn't really been like that at all, you know, in the spring before. I mean, the schedules have come out kind of late, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot going on, and, you know, it's probably a conversation between the coaching staff, like, hey, what do we not want to be seen, you know? And so, you know, that's kind of a difficult thing. I'm not going to sit here and complain about it. I don't do their job. I don't even know what it's like, so I can't sit here and, you know, not know that and criticize them and stuff like that. So we definitely appreciate the access, and we respect all the rules all the time. I mean, they've let us see a lot of full length duration practices. So I think we've been to like five or six. Good. It's been great to get some good insight on this team. So we'll continue to do it for the next couple of weeks till we can.
And if there's something they really didn't want you to see, they wouldn't let you see it. That's yeah. So it's not like it's like, because I saw this like at Cowboys camp that someone called out a reporter for just asking a question. I'm like, no, it's just part of it. Huh?
Yeah. No. And you know, like, there's days where we're only allowed to go for 10 to 15 minutes, you know, and get a little bit of footage, and then we leave. And it's, you know, that's it's your house. It's your rules. And we all abide by them. We aren't allowed to send out any reports or observations until practice is over, you know? So there's certainly still limits to what we can and can't do in there. But, you know,
I applaud LSU for giving y'all access.
Yeah. Right?
I'm very lucky that they do, because I think what Michigan's doing is just insane. I think it's a spit in the face to all your fans.
Yeah.
Any media, film anything, or at least I was told that that's what's happening at Michigan.
I don't see a lot of clips ever online, so you know, and you know that as a guy that grew up around there, you know, I have an appetite for that from time to time, you know. So,
but Garrett Nussmeier doesn't look hurt.
No, not at all. Yeah. Like I said, he was out there moving around well in the pocket, participated in everything. Aaron Anderson was back out there. He had leg sleeves on both legs. He didn't do any of the team stuff, but he was out there running around doing all the indie stuff. So good to see that. And it's funny, I did notice the first practice we went to, he just didn't look like he was running full speed, you know, like when he was out there running routes and doing all that kind of stuff. And I was like, hey, he doesn't look like he's running that fast. But then again, I'm like, you know, these guys run like 20 plus miles per hour. So it might just, like, you know, look like they're running slow, but not in reality. But yeah, he looks like he's fine. Solomon Thomas, obviously, you know, rolling around on the the roller thing, and he's on the bike and stuff, so trying to just stay in shape and rehab and all that. But I think that that's all kind of the injury stuff. Tylan Singleton had a really nice TFL, forced fumble on Harlan Berry, one of the last plays of practice, and he was a little slow to get up, but I think he walked off under his own power. Nothing too serious there. So, yeah, I think everybody's doing good. They're in a good spot, and we'll keep rolling. One last tidbit I wanted to give you. A lot of 12 personnel, a lot of two tight end stuff, a lot of Bauer Sharp, Tredez Green, misdirection, run blocking, play action. And Joe Sloan talked a lot about that in his press conference, that they have more diversity in that tight end room than they've had. So it opens up more opportunities to do different things. So I think we'll see a lot of that personnel grouping. And you didn't really see a lot of it last year because you had Mason Taylor and Tredez. And Tredez had his moments, but I don't know if he was ready to take on both a blocking and a receiving role. I think he's more in position to do that this year with his willingness to improve there. Alex Atkins really coaching these guys up well. I got some great video out of him one-on-one with these guys, giving tips and techniques. So I think we'll see a lot of different personnel groupings, but 12 I think is going to be lethal, especially in the red zone. They had like three touchdowns in that red zone period to Tredez, to Bauer, in that personnel. And Caden Durham had a rushing touchdown too, so.
This always is the number one John Eads comment here. I didn't probably expect the either. Didn't time. Expect every time, dude.
I love him, man. He's my favorite. I listen to him 24/7. He's the best. He even wrote a song about our station, so I'm just paying tribute.
24/7.
Yeah. I'm in his top like 0.1% of listeners on Spotify every year.
Oh, I don't listen to Spotify. I didn't know they sent that.
It's like the rap thing they send at the end of the year. Like, okay, who top songs rap. Are, top okay. artists. I'm in like the top 0.1%. Big fan of his work. So it's all over my Instagram page. Every edit I make of the whatever's going on, high school stuff, young boy song, you know? So
solid. Work. I like Make America Slime Again.
That's right. Massa coming to New Orleans in a couple months. Yeah. We got to get him, to perform at like a thing around here sometime, if that's possible. I don't know.
Well, yeah. So when I meet you, I got to walk up and say, "What's up, Slime?"
You can.
Slime?
Yeah. No. Hey, best music, though. And he's from Baton Rouge, of course. So, you know.
Yeah. I think that's Malik Nabers' favorite artist.
Yep.
Quite a few players that's their favorite artist. So,
Shock's a big Van Halen guy, so you know it's just signs of the times.
But that was going to be my next question, because I know like there's time to time where you guys are probably in the same vehicle.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So who has aux?
Jacques has aux because he doesn't like to wear headphones. So whatever he's working on is just, you know, it's playing out loud for everybody to hear. And you know what? I mean, he's the one working that day, so I don't have anything to say. But it is funny. Sometimes he and a guy that used to intern with us, Andre, who works at Tiger Rag, they'll just like be at practice and start singing, you know, Ariana Grande, Katy Perry, you know, just bringing up some of these lyrics. Just funny, you know, especially if there's something going on that's related to the lyric, you know what I mean? Like side by side or something like that. It's funny stuff, man. But he's a big Van Halen rock guy. I think he just had a concert he hosted at the Texas Club or something like that.
So. Yeah. The rock
Red,
and blue.
Red Rock and Blue.
Yeah.
Not my cup of tea, but you know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I used to be a country DJ, and when LSU beat UCLA 9 to 5, I tweeted out like an AI Dolly Parton thing.
Okay.
Used to be a country DJ, and Jock actually sent me a message, and he was like, "Anytime the score is 9 to 5, I use that reference."
Yep.
But I could see y'all two driving to Clemson, and y'all are in the same vehicle, and you shook me all night long, and then I could see you in the. And the passenger side, be like, "Jacques, can we play Nevada?"
You know what's funny is usually it's Jacques and Darren. I don't know if you've met Darren. He's okay. He's a huge YB fan, young boy fan.
Okay, yeah.
Massive, like almost as big as me. So I drove with him to one of the games before, And he was basically playing my playlist. And he's like 50 years old. I'm like, this is sick. This is me in like 20 years. So that was awesome. He's got this iPod. He's got all the songs on there. So
that is so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see though, if I could see Jacques having seniority though, because if it was y'all three in the vehicle, yeah, y'all are going to be rocking some AC/DC.
Yeah. I like to mess with Jacques. Sometimes me and Kevin, my coworker, will use some of that young person lingo around him. Like, Jacques, you got no riz, bro. You got no aura. No. Like, what are you talking about? And then he'll start using it in his vocabulary too. So I love doing that. You know, they just have no idea what we're talking about. But
that is so great. Well, John, keep up your good work. We'll have you on again soon. But like I said, I mean, your baseball coverage was so good. Your football coverage continues to be great. And can't wait to meet you in person one day, man. Keep in touch.
Likewise. I'll be around. Not hard to find. And appreciate you having me on. Always always fun popping on. So
there you go. John Eads, WAFB. Make sure you go give him a follow. Now, really do appreciate him. It is important to note, though, like we pushed the start of the live stream back just a little bit. I got a few texts say, why aren't we live at 6? I wanted to deal with the Saints, right? I wanted to let the Saints preseason game end. And I bring this up because, goodness gracious, it is ironic how the football gods treat you. Because I remember way back when people hated Aaron Brooks. Right now, I would take Aaron Brooks as the quarterback of the New Orleans Saints. But I say that because, you know, the Saints for so long had Drew freaking Brees. And then Drew Brees' prime, really the end of the Drew Brees era was, you know, 2018, 2019. And then what happened? Joe Burrow came along and changed the history of the LSU quarterback room forever. Now, it's funny. I'm not saying LSU didn't have great quarterbacks, but it is interesting that the Drew Brees era kind of sort of began when Matt Flynn was done at LSU. And obviously, you had Mettenberger and Danny Etling, and they were fine players. But the football gods were not going to allow us to have Drew Brees in his prime at the same exact time as Joe Burrow in 2019, Jaden Daniels in 2023, and Garrett Nussmeier now. The football god said, look, we'll give you a little crossover there. And when you are in the prime of the LSU quarterback era like we are now with Joe and Jaden and now Garrett, who's probably going to be a first-round pick, three first-round picks in the matter of, what, 5-6 years? It's insane. The football gods are going to be like, now we can't let you in the beautiful football mecca of Louisiana have Drew Brees and what's happening now at the same exact time, right? Take a look at Green Bay. Yes, Green Bay, they have had a gazillion great quarterbacks in a row. Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love. But who is Wisconsin, the Badgers? Who have they had a quarterback that's been any good? 1 year of Russell Wilson and that's it. So the football gods are never going to allow you to have elite quarterbacks at the same time. Always understand that. It hit me like a ton of bricks during the Saints game. Always remember that. Tell your friends that that's why the Saints have the worst quarterback room in the NFL right now. It is ass. It is dookie water, hot dog water. Dude, it is the assiest ass I have ever seen. Kim Kardashian could have 5 more BBLs, and it still wouldn't amount to the ass that is in the Saints quarterback room right now. That is where we are. It is hard to watch. Hard. Pause. But guess what? Maybe it's Garrett Nussmeier. Maybe it's somebody else that comes in and saves the Saints quarterback room next year. But goodness gracious, it was hard to watch. And I don't even think Spencer Rattler played that bad. And Tyler Shuck obviously did some good things. It's just, I said this earlier.
If I ever see Drew Brees in person again, I'm going to cry. I am going to freaking cry. Because we may never see that again at the quarterback position for the Saints. The Saints will have another great quarterback. Hopefully it's Tyler Shuck or Spencer Rattler. Hopefully. But it's not going to be probably. So, yeah, it's hard. But if you want my full thoughts on that, go to Believe in Saints. All right. Now, next thing, before we get back into some current LSU stuff, as far as camp news and notes, for some reason I lost 10, 15 viewers talking Saints. There is one LSU NFL story that did get us viral on Twitter yesterday. There's some things I do exclusive to Twitter. You can always follow me there at PowerHourLSU. And this was one post that was just kind of stream of consciousness. It kind of hit me like a ton of bricks that nobody is talking about this. This is pretty unprecedented when it comes to LSU football legends. Because so much has been made about Tyrann Mathieu retiring and him becoming a coach when we already have an LSU legend. And obviously, I want Tyrann to coach at some point if he wants to. We already have an LSU legend that is getting the opportunity of a lifetime here. Kelvin Shepard, who I knew in college, lived in the same apartment complex as Kelvin Shepard, interviewed him 1,000 times. One of the nicest LSU football players you'll ever meet, at least in my experience. Why are we not talking more about him being the defensive coordinator for a Super Bowl contender? And I am cheering for him. This is going to be tough for him. He has never been a coordinator. But one of the best coaches in the NFL said, look, I need you to go out there as a coach and bite kneecaps off. And that is exactly what Kelvin Shepard is going to do as the defensive coordinator of the Lions. I love Kelvin Shepard. His football IQ is off the charts. You don't believe me? You know the T-Bob play that everybody talks about? It doesn't happen if Kelvin Shepard doesn't make a ridiculous fourth and one stop before the five-minute drive in the T-Bob snap versus Tennessee in 2010. It's probably Kelvin Shepard's biggest LSU play, but he had so many. He was such an underrated LSU linebacker. Very, very, very underrated. But I'm cheering for you, Shep. I really am. If you're watching this, I doubt it. You're definitely doing more important things than watching my stupid ass. But holy crap, that is ridiculous. He's my age. He's my age. And he is coordinating an NFL defense for a Super Bowl contender. Y'all, that is so cool. Do you know how talented you have to be able to do that? So I am cheering for him. Okay. Ooh, I'm not going to have Mike here and get me in trouble. I'm not going to do a Shador chat. No Shador chat tonight. H-Town, good to see you. Eric, the show's not over, man. In fact, it's just getting started. Last Sunday, we went 2.5 hours. I kind of want to do it again. Kidding. But there you go. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Once again, it is so important. Like, if there is one thing you can do for me, we only have 5 days to do this, PHL, and I understand that all of you can get, but I'm also going to give you the opportunity to win $250 by just voting for our friends at Labort Therapy Center for the best therapy clinic in the Acadiana region. We have been very lucky to grow our audience in Lafayette in the 337 region, and look, if you prove to me that you voted for Labort Therapy Center, I'll give away one of my Malik Nabers cards in an LSU uniform. Just shoot me an email that you showed that you voted for Labort Therapy Center at Power Hour LSU, and I'll send you a Lafayette Legends card. But please, 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 it is so big, Labort Therapy Center. The link is down below. It's a long link. It's in the description, but go and tag me on Twitter or send what, actually tag me on Twitter. Heck, we really need to help them win this. We really do. Okay. Now, as far as some current LSU stuff, I wanted to give you some real juice at the end of it because we haven't talked so much in terms of practice reports. I do want to share a few things involving Garrett Nussmeier. he has continued to look really, really, really good in practice. And what's very interesting is I'm not sure practice reps necessarily mean anything as far as game reps are concerned, but Garrett had, before his pretty good season last year, Garrett had some rough turnover periods in practice, more so than what he has had this year, at least in my understanding of it from reliable sources, that he's been excellent, even with this little hiccup with the tendonitis and all of it. You know, I just have a tough time believing, even if you think LSU's wide receiver room takes a step back without Kyren Lacy, even if you think this offensive line is going to have a tough year, all of that can be overcame, if you will, if Garrett has the season that I'm expecting him to have, right? It was so good last year. And I understand I get in shouting matches with guests, me more so defending Garrett, while at the same time being very critical of him. But my understanding is the health is fine. Now, do we find it to be a tad bit interesting that LSU has limited access because of this, or coincidentally because of this? As John Eads pointed out, he probably thinks it is because of the Garrett Nussmeier injury that the access has been kind of tighter-lipped, if you will. But I, and looking at you, because I know I sometimes look at the chat and my prep sheet over here and all that stuff, I want to look at you directly in the eyes here. I, according to, you know, not only Eads, but everyone I've spoken to, they feel fine about it. But it is, I will lend credence to this, it is something that they limited the access some, right? I think there's a few different schools of thought as to why they did that. But, you know, to me, in the grand scheme, I think Garrett is going to be fine. I really, really, really do. And that's that. Another thing that I do want to bring out is one guy that has continuously lit up my phone. Now, not him personally. I've never spoken to this player in particular, but LSU is starting to grow in confidence in their offensive tackle play, right? 75 and 71, Weston Davis at right tackle, Tyree Adams at left tackle. Now, in terms of pass rushing, TJ Parker, who they will play, is probably a better pass rusher than anyone that we have on our team. And Will Helt would definitely be in our rotation if he was on our team. But our defensive ends are still really good, and they are still giving those offensive tackles as much as they can handle going into this Clemson game. And I understand that so much has been made about the offensive guard position in particular, but I also want to be clear that one thing that we must consider is who will step in an offensive tackle if something were to happen. Who would it be? Who would be that next guy that would step in right away? Now, LSU up to this point into both of these young men's respective careers, you would have liked someone like Ethan Callaway to determine, to develop into being that number one offensive tackle off the bench, or someone like Ori Williams, if you will. But up to this point, that's just not happened. So I do think that is part of LSU's logic in having Kerryus Kern play so much offensive tackle in practice up to this point, even though most of us do feel he is better served long-term as a guard. And a lot of us feel that maybe Kerryus Kern would be the best guard that we would have on our team. So we'll see. Hopefully, if one of our tackles were to go down, that a guy like maybe Kari Lee, whoever it may be, would be ready to go to step in right away to help our team. All right. It's a good question, Joseph. I don't know. I think that's part of why – I think that's part of why we're figuring this out now. Okay. SLS, welcome back. Come on, Carter. We've heard from Moscona. Anyone doubting anything just needs to pay attention to only Matt. He's the end-all, be-all when it comes to LSU. I like Matt Moscona.
I do.
But I don't know if anybody is the end-all, be-all regarding LSU. I don't think Matt thinks that. So, yeah, and I don't know what you're even referencing, to be quite honest. But I guess it's good to have you back. Will Campbell did look good in his first preseason game. There you go. Cardi B. What about Cardi B with Dez Bryant? Yeah, man. Shout out Kelvin Shepard, man. Yeah, 46. I have 3,000 followers. I occasionally get the viral tweet. The thing that drives you crazy, though, is like our guest a few weeks ago, Chris Marler, he consistently gets like 50,000 views on his tweets, but he's got like 4,000 followers. It makes no sense. Let's go to Dev. Dev, good to see you. Let me know if you're still in here. I think you sent this in when our guest flew in. Lance, good to see you as well. Jeffrey, what's up? We'll go to Dev right here, though, and then we'll get to Kyle in a moment. Off topic, but the biggest reason we haven't been great defensively the last 3 years is because of overplaying the 2021 class, Burns, Savion Jones, Sage Ryan, and Greg Penn. Well, Savion Jones was mostly a good player, somewhat inconsistent. He did some good things in his first preseason game as well. But here's my thing on the Sage Ryan and Major Burns criticisms, because it's clear as day that they weren't all that great. But we did get the Baylor game where we played the young guys, and Sage Ryan and Major Burns did not play. And what happened? That was arguably our worst game defensively. It was up there. So I get it. There's a lack of development and so on and so on. I wouldn't so much in that instance, though, Dev, criticize Sage Ryan and Major Burns, because if they are being asked to play, all they can do is play. Now, should they have played harder and more consistent? Sure. In particular, Sage Ryan, when it comes to effort. Major Burns, I think, was a little too hot-headed at times. But yeah, neither one of them were great players. But at the same time, part of that blame falls on everyone. And I really do mean that. Part of that falls on Derek Davis. He was a backup running back at Pitt, who ironically and unfortunately just had a season-ending injury. Part of that falls on LaTerrence Welch, who didn't work out at LSU, went to Arizona State, and got kicked off the team. You know, there have been so many misses. Just tons. Who remembers Antoine Sampa, who transferred to the Campbell Camels? Still don't know what state Campbell was in, but that's where he went. So there was a lot of really, really, really good recruits that just did not pan out. But LSU's not the only one. There have been some misses in that middle tier four-star range in the SEC at quite a few schools, which is ironic because I feel the services have gotten way better when it comes to ranking the elite players. I don't think I'm the end-all, be-all when it comes to LSU football analysis. I don't. But I don't think that's, like I said, I have a lot of respect for Moscona. I just don't think anybody's the end-all, be-all. I don't want you guys to think I'm the end-all, be-all on LSU analysis, because I'm not. Coach Coach Brian Kelly took over a team with 39 scholarship players. Oh, here we go again. And LSU didn't have the money to compete in the NIL with the big dogs. I agree more so with the second part than the first. The 39 scholarship players excuse kind of sounds like the Spencer Rattler excuses, right? You know, at the, some point, it falls on deaf ears, right? You know, yeah, it's true. 39 scholarship players. It is tough to overcome that. But in that very first year, you went to the SEC championship game. And then the next year, you didn't, with an overall better team, in my mind. But, of course, the defense defensed or didn't defensed. So there you go. Let's go, Ori Williams. This is cool. Right here. Didn't want to play this. Jaden Daniels, Will Campbell, doesn't get much better than that, y'all. Love to see it. Are they running 12 personnel under center or pistol? You know, I know this is like sacrilegious to bring up. You know who ran a lot of pistol last year? The Falcons. And it was somewhat effective, right? Our pistol usage was kind of sort of effective, but kind of sort of predictable. But yeah, I love pistol. I do. I feel like teams should run more pistol, not less. But that's just how I view that formation. There's a few reasons why I like pistol in particular. And what's really interesting about that, as far as JT Lindsey is concerned, the Alexandria offense was very unique in how they actually lined up JT Lindsey. I like watching creative high school offenses. Where they would align JT Lindsey was kind of... It was shotgun, but it wasn't quite pistol. Like, he would be kind of at a 45-degree-ish angle to the negative on every play, or on a lot of plays that they did. And it worked. It worked. So, that was another reason why I like Lindsey, because we were on a lot of shotgun, and he is very comfortable you know, running out of shotgun. So, there you go. Oh, I already have a few of y'all messaging me. With some Labor Therapy Center receipts. That's good stuff. Yeah, we'll give out a Malik card next week. Crazy. I almost wanted to go punch Trevor Lawrence in the face. Did anyone see that medicine ball he threw BTJ that almost got him like just knocked out? And BTJ, of course, popped right back up because he's built different. But I was watching that Jaguars game last night. I was like, what the frick are you doing, Trevor? you know how long I've been begging them to use 12 personnel. Ugh. Matt Mason's. Don't know Matt Mason's. Let's see. I want to get to as many as we can. The Swinson in the back. That was Swinson. Oh, yeah. That was Braden Swinson in the background of the Saints. Carvis, I know you're an actual, like, Floridian. You might have been at the game. Let's see here. Oh, I did not know it was Monster Milan's birthday. We did that whole thing for him earlier. And we did not know it was Monster Milan's birthday. Crazy. No, I don't know why, but when I was putting together my SEC projections going into next year, I still keep talking myself into Auburn being a good team this year. I don't know why. I watched every snap Jackson Arnold played last year. It was as bad as advertised. I don't know why I'm talking myself into Auburn being pretty good this year. But here we are. I am here. But I just like that roster. I think their 1-2 wide receiver combo is the best in the SEC. I like but not love what they have at running back. I think their offensive line's experienced. And defensively, you know, they're fine. Kedrick Falk might be the best in the conference. Back seven, we'll see what happens. But yeah, I don't know why. I really, really, really don't know why I'm talking myself in Auburn as much as I am. I feel like it's going to fall flat on my face and they're going to be 6-6. But, you know, they were very unlucky. And one thing that has never failed me is yard per play data. I say never. It fails you. But Auburn last year was top five in offensive and defensive SEC yard per play. Let me repeat. Auburn last year was top five in the SEC in yard per play on offense and defense. Do you know how hard that is to do? It's really hard. And that was with atrocious quarterback play in Peyton Thorne. Downright atrocious. I think atrocious is a strong word, but not great. Bottom five, bottom three quarterback play, especially when you factor in he's a year five, year six guy that was a returning starter with that wide receiver grouping, which is elite. They're going to be elite this year. They were elite last year. So, yeah, they had drops. Fairweather had some big drops in a Vanderbilt upset, but they were unlucky. They were a very, very, very unlucky team. They lost to Oklahoma because of a pick six that Peyton Thorne threw in the second half. That Vanderbilt upset was the Pavia kill special, right? Where Auburn, according to the box score and the advanced metrics, dominated that game, but they came up short and when it was actually time to go out there and get the real thing done, which is actually score points. So, yes, they bring in another bottom three quarterback from last year in Jackson Arnold, but he's young, five-star recruit. Is he going to be better? I don't know, but I keep going back to the Tigers on the Plains. We'll see. Carvis agrees. Let's go to Pegasus. Honest question for me. What does being under center change for the guards and tackles specifically? Your assignments should mostly be the same and still have to get push on the guy in front regardless. Now, I know a lot of you do not like Blake Ruffino, and I totally get it. There are days I don't like him, and there's days he doesn't like me, but he's my best buddy in LSU media, and I think he's the best at doing this. I have never agreed with him more than our topic of talking under center, and you'd have to go through the long appearance he had on here Thursday night of me bringing that up to him. Like, if I were LSU this year, I'd go under center more, but that's not what they're going to do. And the reason is, even though when you go under center and you get the play action game going, the big difference is the quarterback's back has to be turned to the play for at least half a second for a play action game to get going. But when you're at a shotgun, it is easier for me as a defensive lineman to see what you're doing. For me, at least when I played, when a quarterback was in shotgun, I could see what you were doing. Whereas if you're under center, there's just more things that can happen, right? In terms of play action, handoffs, pure straight dropbacks, three-step, five-step. And I know it looks kind of like prehistoric and different, but to me, it's still very, very, very effective. You know, the offense that I keep pointing back to that I thought was just so underrated, SEC StatCat was really high on this offense last year as well, was Arkansas's. They were insanely explosive. Now, their wide receiver room was really good. Their number four guy got drafted in the third round. But their offense was explosive with very inconsistent and erratic quarterback play. Very. Well, a lot of it was because they went under center. They had a lot of success getting under center and getting that play action stuff going. So I'm just a big believer in it. Huge believer in it. And also it for me as an offensive lineman, you get under center and the running back behind me is able to really, you know, get some steam going downhill. That just makes run blocking that much funner. It just does. So I just love my quarterback being under center. I do, at least some of the time. But at the same time, it's probably not what Garrett is accustomed to. You know, LSU's best quarterback of all time is one of the biggest shotgun quarterbacks in the NFL now, and that's Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow loves being in shotgun. But then again, that's just who he is as a quarterback. Joe is so good at deciphering everything that him being in shotgun allows him to see everything. And Garrett is really good at deciphering things as well. The difference is, well, the Bengals have had a little bit more success running the ball than we have. But I love being under center. Skipper. There you go. Now, a few more things. Let me see. I always like having one topic that we didn't get to.
this one.
We released a short recently on Bauer Sharp. All right, we're releasing more shorts. We'll introduce you to the person that has been cutting up some shorts, helping me out with some of this stuff. He is so unfreaking believably talented. And look, it's important to note that there are so many short form creators that I freaking love. Call me Trey, and I hate BBLs. that's their Twitter handles. Are my two favorite. They're the absolute best. They're way ahead of me when it comes to short edits. My short edits are more like from the show. Their short edits are actually like ones that people really like to watch, which are like highlights, the 6-7 TikTok trend, all that stuff. But man, our shorts have been really good, and we released one on Bauer Sharp. It's important to note that we also released one on Tre'Davious Green. So LSU's tight end room, could it be better than what it was last year? The answer to that is possibly yes. Mason Taylor is a better player than Tre'Davious Green or Bauer Sharp. It's going to be hard for both of them to exceed Mason Taylor. But when it comes to tight end play, two tight ends are better than one. They just are. You take a look at some of the best offenses in the NFL last year. You know what a lot of them had in common? They had elite tight ends. That has been the case, right? Look at the teams that have made runs to the Super Bowl. They have been elite at tight end. George Kittle and the 49ers. These Ravens teams with Lamar Jackson have been amazing at tight end. The Chiefs, obviously, with in the minds of many, the best tight end. But one very undertold story about those offenses is they have also had very strong tight end twos. Let's take the Minnesota Vikings, if you will. The Minnesota Vikings had two different tight ends last year with PFF grades in the top 20. TJ Hockenson is the better tight end, but he's a different tight end than Josh Oliver, who is their blocking tight end. And just a pure blocking tight end. And obviously, Sam LaPorta of the Lions has been the best young, non-Bowers, non-McBride tight end. But the brilliance in Sam LaPorta has been Ben Johnson using the other tight ends, getting very creative with them, play action, 12 personnel under center, switch releasing them from time to time. He gets very exotic with this tight end usage. So as great as Mason Taylor was, tight end play becomes exponentially better when you have multiples, right? Because you can bring your blocking tight end out, have your receiving tight end, and you as a linebacker think, okay, if they actually go out on routes, the one I have to worry about is a receiving tight end, but it'd be your blocking tight end is the one you actually throw the football to. And LSU has really been lacking in tight end development and just tight ends in general. Like, really think about how valuable Mason Taylor has been to this program. Really think about it. Because part of why a guy like Jack Besh was able to outproduce Malik and BTJ and other great young receivers as true freshmen is because, you know, Cole Taylor wasn't good enough. He was good enough to play in the Big 12. He had a great career with West Virginia, but he wasn't good enough to play in the SEC. So LSU had to use a thing I like to call 10.5 personnel, where they're basically playing four wide receiver sets and Jack Besh playing the tight end, and he was incredible at it. So the next year, Brian Kelly comes in. They get a young tight end in Mason Taylor. He becomes a full-time tight end. They want to put Jack Besh in his natural position as wide receiver, but they could not find a tight end too. Now, really think about it. For 3 years, LSU could not find a tight end too. They just couldn't find it. It just couldn't happen. Could you imagine if Mason Taylor wasn't around? So now he's out. And a guy that I have been a little bit higher than most on this year is actually Donovan Green. All right, so I've mentioned him a few times. He's practiced some and he's scrimmaged some. The results have been mixed. And speaking of media members and whoever you want to, but Donovan Green was at Texas A&M and he played. Donovan Green, I think, could be sneaky good for LSU this year. I really do think so. So we'll see how this all works out. But look, the greatest college tight end of all time is Brock Bowers, right? He is the best that I have ever seen, personally. As great as he was, what really made him effective was Darnell Washington, right? The blocking tight end who's out with the Steelers and had a touchdown last night, ironically. That's what made him deadly. Like, as good as, and Brock Bowers still would have been good if Darnell Washington didn't exist. Or if Oscar Delp didn't come along or whoever else. But that tight end two and tight end three can be so damn valuable. Because out of everybody that plays a game of football, out of any position that actually is out there on every single snap, the one position that can do the widest variety of things on a football field at any time is a tight end. It honestly is a tight end. Tight ends block. Tight ends catch. Tight ends are oftentimes on special teams, whether it be field goal team, punt team, so they go out there and tackle. So as great as Mason Taylor was, I am so excited about the potential of LSU just not necessarily just running 12 personnel, but just having more than one tight end that they can really trust. Now, Tre'Davious Green was fine last year as a true freshman, but there is a difference in what he did as a true freshman compared to what a tight end does, because last year they used him as a big slot, not as a tight end. And LSU's hope is that they can actually use him as a tight end and a big slot. Because if you can do that, that means there's literally an endless amount of things that he can do on a football field at one time. So, yeah, I'm really excited about this LSU tight end room. I also... And that's why, you know, I'm trying to also bring up Mason Taylor, because he was so unfreaking believably good for us. Now, great live stream tonight. Literally, it was a Sunday spectacular. Special thanks to Mr. John Eads for joining us. Let's see. Good seeing Tyron Matthew at practice this weekend. Look at this. I get this message. It's from Mark. It's an Adam Schefter tweet. It said, Carter, you're talking about LSU legendary linebackers. Duke Riley just signed with the Commanders. How about that? Duke Riley, also a musician. Love me some Duke Riley. Three-star recruit Duke Riley, like Foster Moreau, a last-second add. Dwayne Bowe that had eye surgery. I wonder if Caleb Jackson might need that. There you go. Now, final announcement. We're doing a PHL get together next Saturday. This will be the first ever PHL get together in the great city, the great metropolis. Actually, to me, the best town in Louisiana is not Baton Rouge. It's not New Orleans. It's not Lafayette. It's not any of that. It is a city that sometimes we call fun. In fact, fun is in the name of the city, if you pronounce it correctly. It is Funroe, Louisiana. It is going down. I thought I had the flyer pulled up. Not smooth at all. It is going down in Monroe, Louisiana, next Saturday, August 16th, at the Monroe Civic Center. Parks Sports Cards, teaming up with them. I met them at the Shreveport Card Show, and we will be set up. I will have 99% of my collection there. You could set up too. I can hook you up and see what they can give you as far as a table is concerned. It's only $2 to enter. If you wear a jersey, you get in free. Kids get in free, but you know, $2 is $2. So 401 Lee Joyner Memorial Expressway in Monroe, Louisiana. And I'm very lucky because I already have one PHLer who messaged me. I say message me, but he'll be with me at the show. Jay Smacks will be there. So you guys will get to meet Jay Smacks. He is absolutely awesome. He's also from Lafayette. Shout out Laborde Therapy. But Monroe, Louisiana. I'll say it. It's not the best city in Louisiana. That would be, to me, it's Baton Rouge. But I do like Monroe. Monroe gets trashed all the time, as does Shreveport, as does Ruston. I get so sick and tired of people trashing North Louisiana. Friend of the channel, actually, I won't say, a guest of the channel trashes North Louisiana all the time. I don't like it. North Louisiana is fun place. And Funroe, Louisiana. And what can you say? So come on out. And of course, I have this box. Let me see if I can find it. I have a full box of LSU cards that are just giveaways, basically. Let's see. We got Justin Jefferson right here. We'll give this one out. Shaquille O'Neal. This guy was kind of good. Jaden Daniels. And here's the actual box. I gave out so many of my Jarvis Landry was a hot name. So I don't know if I have any more Jarvis cards in here. So there you go. Your giveaway will be in here. Jeremy, what's up? Why I don't know, Jeremy. I don't know why they trashed North Louisiana. North Louisiana is epic. I mean, honestly, the best rapper of the early 2000s and mid 2000s could have picked anywhere to set up his studios. Could have picked anywhere in the world to set up his studios. But what does 50 Cent say? We're setting up in Shreveport. That's what he decided to do. But we're going to be in Monroe on Saturday. So Jay Smacks is going to be, he's going to be with me. It's going to be a lot of fun. So there you go.
It is Power Hour LSU. Boom.
Tonight. Oh, we're doing some barbecue chicken. Let's go. Thanks to our top super chatter, Mr. Jared. Let's go.